We were hiking past the White House late one night when our eyes beheld an eerie sight. The president appeared with hopes very strange. The zombies and vampires of global climate change. It's not global warming, say oil company disciples. Our math tells us it's natural weather cycles. These claims from industry heavies, let the president rest behind his own protective levee.
And that is Boris Bobby Pickett, and it would be funny if it wasn't so scary. That song, I think, is about 5 years old, came out at Halloween, about 2005, 2006, I believe, and it's still happening. Those politicians in the back room playing politics with our planet, with our children's future. If you're outraged, well, you'll want to listen to David Roberts. Dave writes a lot of fabulous columns and a lot on a recent article in the New Yorker magazine that really took us into the sausage factory and showed us how bad it really is and who caved and why. And it's quite enraging and enlightening, and I really am glad that you could take a few minutes to be with us, Dave. You write on all my favorite topics, and you've been writing a lot about this article in The New Yorker by, is it Ryan Lizzie?
Ryan Lizza.
Lizza, thank you. A fabulous job of reporting. I mean, really going inside, and I know you really appreciated all the information that was really right there in black and white.
Yes, it's always interesting for a blogger to witness someone spend 3 months reporting out a story and write 10,000 words on it. Not a chance we get very often.
Yeah, and really, it's as bad as we thought, isn't it?
Yes, it was. I think it was in a way that I and other people didn't fully recognize at the time, kind of a perfect storm. Pretty much everything that could have worked against success did. And that includes, obviously, some bad acting on the part of politicians and on the part of senators, but also circumstances that were outside anyone's control, like the economy, like Republicans choosing to go with just full-fledged opposition to everything, like the crazy Senate rules that require 60 votes to get anything done. So there are a long
weird
list of culprits.
Yeah, Harry Reid having some strange behavior at really bad times.
say again.
Harry Reid, just how he threw everybody for a loop with
his
decisions.
Well, he did, but even more peculiar to me was something that pops up several times throughout the narrative is that the Obama administration really yanked the rug out from under the process at a few key moments. And to this day, you know, I talked with Ryan a good bit, and to this day he doesn't understand, and I don't know, I haven't talked to anybody who really feels like they understand exactly what the administration was thinking, exactly what the thought process was.
And, of course, Rahm Emanuel had the president's ear, and you would have thought, just, and I know you cover this beat, you know, a long time and very closely, to know that Ari Emanuel was one of the founders of the Detroit Project with Laurie David and the other producer of An Inconvenient Truth. I'm forgetting his name right now. And they are passionate about climate change, and presumably they share Thanksgiving and Hanukkah, their Jewish family, of course. And it's too bad that Ari could not really seriously frighten, I guess, Rahm Emanuel about climate change realities, because he didn't seem to be the passionate activist, although I know they don't let activists into the White House. But you know what I'm saying. He's pretty enlightened, I would have thought. But he was really just going with the most politically expedient thing to do and did not want to, quote, take a chance on something that didn't have a chance of winning, which really, I guess, comes down to part of the problem, isn't it, Dave, that there is no movement that's sort of muscular enough behind the climate change, the demand for climate change legislation that is strong and robust and, as Eric Pooley says, strong enough so that nature will notice. And we had that with health care reform. There was, you know, demand for that, and I'm not sure if we got anything better. But, you know, there's a constituency behind a lot of these issues that, and I know it's there for environmental issues and climate change, it just somehow does not seem to, you know, penetrate Washington, it seems.
Well, this is one of the overarching stories throughout this entire process, is that the people who are inside trying to make this deal, trying to push this through, had almost no leverage. I mean, they had very few cards to play. And one of the reasons for that is there is no political risk for a politician now, just dissembling and delaying and not doing anything on climate. There's no risk. No one has ever lost office over it. No one gets a ton of letters about it. No one is scared about being yelled at a town hall about it. There's just no, there's almost no, I mean, this is really shocking, the extent of it to me once, you know, and Ryan too, is just how little senators are hearing spontaneously from constituents about this. So there's no fear on the other side. So all the bargaining went one way.
And it's ironic, isn't it? No fear, when that, of all the scary things out there, climate change is one of the more frightening ones, I think, and you probably agree. Anyone who has children, which I know you do, are concerned about what, you know, climate extremes is going to do in terms of, you know, killer weather events, to droughts, to you know, just killing off species, and let's not even talk about the oceans for a moment. It's really frightening stuff. It's odd, isn't it? I mean, frustrating and odd at the same time, and even more, you know, more than vexing. What is still not happening? 2010.
Well, I think that there's no level of cynicism high enough when you're talking about the U.S. Senate. I mean, that's another thing to come out of this story, is that U.S. senators care about very specific indigenous concerns to their states. They want to know how it will affect their constituents and how it will affect their electoral chances, and that's pretty much it. I mean, these sort of larger, what about my grandkids, what about the world, that stuff doesn't even enter the picture. It's got no voice inside the process.
Well, never mind that we're seeing extreme weather events across the planet already, with the fires in Russia, severe drought and heat there as well, and the floods in Pakistan and record heat waves on the East Coast. I mean, we're already, and then we had the president of the Maldives Islands on a few weeks ago talking about installing solar panels and asking America to get a grip on the scientific reality, because they're going under, literally, and they don't have any place to go. So it is not any, you know, longer something that's far off in the distance, either chronologically or geographically. And yet, and look at the perfect storm we had, the Gulf Coast disaster being a real example of the dark side of our oil dependence. You'd think that this would all be a perfect prelude leading up to the Senate finally tackling climate change, and then they go and drop the ball. And it was astounding and mysterious until this article in New Yorker really kind of gave it to us, whether it's and it's quite unappealing and unappetizing. And where do we go from here, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think one thing that I think everyone agrees on at the moment is that the prospect of a comprehensive federal bill, which is what the climate movement has been working toward single-mindedly for decades now, is off the table for at least 2 years, and I think realistically probably more like 4 to 6 years, and then after that, who knows? So the long-sought goal of getting one big bill that's going to sort of be our, you know, first shot in the war, the big dramatic bill, isn't going to happen. So I think what's going to happen is the movement is going to have to decentralize a little bit and kind of spread out and take this on in chunks. Some people are going to have to go defend the EPA, which, as you know, will be issuing some greenhouse gas regulations soon. Some people are going to have to go to the states and really push the states, because the states are leaders on this stuff. Some people are going to have to go down and really concentrate on movement building at the grassroots. Some people are going to have to go in to courts and return to sort of the more old-fashioned sue the bastards kind of environmentalism, where you really just get up in companies' face and make their life miserable until they deal with you. So in a sense, everything in the past decade has been narrowing down to this one obsessive focus on D.C., and now that's just bust. So everybody's going to have to turn back and think again about how to decentralize and how to become a little bit of a looser network and not quite so hierarchical and not quite so single-minded.
Were you among the disappointed when President Obama, we thought a pretty green president, during the oil kill last summer, was talking about how we need to make a transition from the old, you know, dirty energy structure to cleaner renewable energy sources, but then didn't really give us a green print for how to do that. He kind of stopped short and almost pulled a George W. Bush out of his hat and said, let's pray. Do you expect more from him, and do you think we'll see better from him now that he's got he's got health care reform behind him, and climate change really is an issue that I do think he understands?
That's part of the tragic aspect of all this, is I do think he gets it. I don't think I was cynical enough about the Obama administration early enough. I mean, I think they recognized early on in the healthcare process, as healthcare was dragging out, I think they sort of realized this isn't going to happen. But I don't think they could afford to be seen saying that. They didn't want to come out and pour cold water on it. So I think what you saw was Obama and his administration officials saying just enough to be able to have, you know, sort of plausible deniability. Like, they said, we support a comprehensive bill. Obama came on TV and said, we support clean energy. But you never saw them really turn a concerted focus to it. I think they said just enough to not look bad, but I don't think they ever really threw themselves behind it, because I think they just gave up and didn't think it was possible and just wanted to sort of let time dribble out.
Do you think they'll regret that?
And they might not have been wrong about that. I mean, it's entirely possible that even if everybody had played everything right, and even if Obama had thrown himself behind it, it just wasn't doable this year because of the economy and other factors like that. It's hard to say on the counterfactual.
Well, we can't do a show on scary things without mentioning the Koch brothers. I would like to call them. Yeah, okay. Well, maybe the other two, but denial. Ignorance, the intensity we're seeing around the Tea Party, doesn't it make you want to start a green Tea Party?
Well,
to tell the truth.
I mean, there's a movement out there for people to join if they want to join it. I mean, I would love if there was some sort of indigenous grassroots movement. But I wrote a post about this the other day. The problem is that we have numbers on our side. If you just sort of take a poll, we have majorities who say yes, climate is changing, and, you know, vaguely, kind of somebody ought to do something about it. But all the intensity, all the anger, and it's only intensity that matters in politics. You know, politicians don't care what you say on a survey. They care whether you're going to call, write them a letter, or vote differently on an issue. And in terms of intensity, all the intensity is on the other side. All the intensity is among the Tea Party folk who view this as part of the big government agenda, blah, blah. So
right,
how
have,
to
and
create
have no
that
solution.
Intensity... How to create that intensity on our side, on the side of doing something about climate change, is a nut somebody's going to have to crack. I don't know what the answer is, but that's the key thing. It's not broad education. It's getting some narrow slice of the electorate passionate about it so that they really make noise. And I don't know how to do that, but I hope somebody's working on it.
And another really scary prospect is what if Proposition 23 should pass here in California? That is too close to call. I mean, it's too close for comfort anyway. And how outrageous is it that Texas oil interests, fueled by the Koch brothers, and spending millions to defeat our landmark, you know, climate change legislation championed by Fran Pavley? I remember when that was signed, that bill, at the Golden Gate Bridge with Arnold Schwarzenegger, not a guy 10 years ago we would have guessed to turn into a climate champion with the advent of the Hummer being his idea. But sure enough, you know, he got it, and now they're trying to take it away. And it's so important that California really sticks to this, because as California goes, so goes the rest of the country, we like to think, and also Oregon and Washington as well, where you are. That's the other green pocket of the country. But if we somehow lose, you know, 32, the original legislation, what kind of message is that going to send?
Well, that would be devastating. I am actually fairly sanguine about it. I actually think that it's going to fail. I think the effort is going to fail. And I think sort of the kind of cold-eyed assessment of why it's going to fail is pretty simple. You have something in California that you didn't have at the national level, which is an activated and wealthy constituency pushing the other direction. I mean, you have a lot of clean tech money and clean tech people who have personal investment in this stuff, and so get angry about it and go spend money and go donate and go start ad campaigns. You have some of that intensity and money on the right side in California. That's what you don't have on the national level. And I think in California they're gonna fight it off because of that.
On the correct side or left side, you said right side, and I know what you meant, but just want to clarify.
Right.
George Shultz leading the effort to defeat Proposition 23 is quite interesting, don't you think?
I mean, this is the thing that the national media doesn't really get, and the Senate really doesn't get. I mean, this is the thing, is the U.S. Senate is the caboose of American culture. They are the last to get the clue. But one thing that's really interesting, and you see some of this in the sort of last-minute push for a renewable energy standard at the federal level, is you have a really strange, interesting coalition here. You have a lot of business people that you wouldn't necessarily expect. You have a lot of military people that you wouldn't necessarily expect. And there's a lot of the older, kind of the older model Republicans back when there used to be Republican moderates. You know, a lot of those people are on the right side of this. It's not just environmentalists, but I think in the little bubble of D.C., they just haven't gotten that yet. In the U.S. Senate, they just haven't gotten that. They just think of this as like something environmentalists ask for. And in the U.S. Senate, the only person who needs to care about environmentalists are legislators from states where environmentalists have power. So only California, really. That's why you couldn't get any traction in the Midwest. But I think the California story will, I think, break through some of that and show people that this is a broader coalition than they thought.
And there was, as you've mentioned, a great editorial in Monday's New York Times in Climate Denial, again, talking about how 19 out of 20 of the Republicans running don't believe in climate change or that it's a serious problem or caused by humans. That says a lot, doesn't it?
I think it's 20 out of 20 now because Mike Castle was the lone, sane holdout, and he got bumped.
Oh, my. You're right.
So
you're right.
I think
it's
a full slate now. It's 100% of Republican Senate candidates.
That's pretty scary.
It is crazy, but I think the fact that it's crazy should give us some hope. And it might sound weird to say, but I think the fact that it's so crazy and so many people recognize it as crazy is I kind of think this is the high water mark for craziness. I think
you're right. It has to be.
A lot of historical forces are pushing in the other direction.
It has to be, or we will get really active and serious about launching this Green Tea Party just to tell the truth and say the emperor has no clothes, folks. Wake up and smell the CO2, really. I can't let you go without talking about climate hawks. I love that. You asked, what should we call people who care about climate change and clean energy? And, of course, those of us who have been trying to find replacements for, you know, environmentalists or sustainability, these kind of catch-all generic words that mean everything and nothing. Words are important, aren't they? And I know Grist, like I do, loves playing with words. So climate hawks, tell us about that.
Well, I mean, the impetus for this is that I write about these people every day, and I've never had a good name to call them because it's not just that environmentalist has bad associations or whatever. It's just that it's inaccurate. I mean, there are lots of environmentalists who care about this stuff, but there are also lots of non-environmentalists who care about climate and clean energy for other reasons, national security or economics or religious, military, whatever. There are lots. The coalition is much broader than environmentalists, and there was no term to capture all those people who care about these topics. So I asked our readers, and we had a really long and fascinating discussion on the site and on Facebook and on Twitter, and I settled on climate hawks for a bunch of reasons. One is just that I think the minute you hear it, you sort of know what it means, right? I mean, it sort of intuitively gets across the meaning, so you don't have to explain a brand new term to someone. But also, I think it carries some connotations of toughness and this sort of will to defend America against threats and this sense of patriotism that I think has been lacking in this movement and that I think will appeal to people. You know, it's John Edwards who said it's time to be patriotic about something other than war, and I think that sentiment really resonated with people, and I think we need to get back some of that spirit, some of that fighting spirit, and not just have this be all mushy Mother Earth
feel good stuff.
You know,
not to mention the Not to mention the competitive spirit, you know, activating that as China
right.
really leapfrogs over us in terms of clean technology. We are out of time, David Roberts, but I want to thank you for your wonderful column and writing and blogging and obsession with this New Yorker article. I've been following every word, and I'm glad you rejected planetarians and sustainablists and skyhuggers in favor of climate hawks. Keep up the great work at GRIST. It's my all-time favorite place to go for not only gloom and doom, but a good laugh as well, because you do it so well.
Thank you, Beth.
So well. Okay, we've been speaking with David Roberts, one of the key writers, top writers at grist.org. If you don't know about GRIST, you must subscribe. It's a beacon in the smog, as they say. It will come to your inbox just about every day with more than you probably have time to read, but a great resource for anybody who wants to educate themselves and be entertained at the same time. Sometimes I like to think that's what we do here on the Green Front. And thanks for joining us for this Halloween edition as we look at some truly scary things out there, but try to take a lighter approach as always. In the meantime, between now and next Wednesday, I want to wish you a great Green Week. For more information about my program, go to Greenfront, thegreenfront.com. If you go to greenfront.com, you'll get a furniture store in Vermont. So make sure you get the greenfront.com in there. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
Science is bad. Solutions are trash. And they do it for the cash. The creatures were having fun. Our Congress was ever wrong. We couldn't tell the mindless zombies from the elected ones. Now we can stop this. We have the technology.